So much depends upon. That line starts one of my favorite poems from the imagist poet William Carlos Williams. His poem simply reads, "So much depends upon a red wheelbarrow glazed with rainwater beside the white chickens." This poem has been much contested. Some people think it's nothing, but it's the most pure representation of imagist poetry I think that we have. And if you think about it, so much does depend upon the red wheelbarrow, which is a means of getting work done easily, glazed with rainwater that nourishes us all beside the white chickens. And which came first, the chicken or the egg? But it's got the red, white, and blue in it. I mean, hundreds, thousands of pages have been written about that poem. But this Musings from the Middle of Nowhere is a recollection of what I've experienced with poetry in my own life and how it has touched me from a young age and how it still affects me now. So thank you for joining me in today's episode of Musings from the Middle of Nowhere. You know, William Carlos Williams was a physician, and it's said that his poetry was often so short because he composed poetry on prescription pads. But long before I discovered William Carlos Williams, I discovered poetry in the form of hymns. And the hymnal stanza was quite popular, you know, at the end of the 1800s, and a lot of poetry is written in that 4-3 beat pattern, you know, 4 beats per line, 3 beats per line. Emily Dickinson wrote quite a bit of her poetry in the hymnal stanza. And so the funny thing is, much of her poetry can be sung to the tune of the Yellow Rose of Texas, which was composed in 4-3. For instance, "There is no frigate like a book to take us worlds away, or any coursers like a page of prancing poetry." But anyway, hymns just filled so much of my time when I was younger. You know, we sang hymns constantly in church, and my mother played hymns on the piano to settle herself, mostly, not the rest of us, but to settle herself in the evenings before she went to bed. She'd play hymn after hymn, and every holiday my family would gather around the piano. My brother mostly would play, but we would sing all kinds of Christmas carols at Christmas time, and we just sang a lot of hymns. So I loved hymns. In fact, I did not know how to play the piano, but when I was 8 years old in church, I heard the song Jesus Saves for the first time. And I thought, I want to know how to play this. So I went home and plucked out that song note by note, added chords, and I learned, "We have heard the joyful sound, Jesus saves," all by myself. And a few weeks after I learned it, we were in church and the regular pianist was gone, and my mother, for some reason, wasn't in church that Sunday. And so they asked, could anybody play hymns on the piano? And I said, I can sing one, play one. And so when I was 8, got up at the front of the church, I played Jesus Saves as the intro hymn. We sang Jesus Saves for the offering, and we sang Jesus Saves for the doxology. But I guess me learning that hymn came in handy. But no, I just have always loved hymns and the beats in the hymns. But no, that's just the first poetry in my life is just simply hymns. Both of my grandmothers were writers. My grandma Scott wrote stories for me to learn to read, and my grandma Pearl would type them up on her typewriter. But the one who was a poet was my grandma Pearl. She wrote a lot of poetry and sent them into magazine contests, and one I can remember that was "When My Grandpa Was a Boy." It's a ridiculous poem. But anyway, she thought she was a poet, and she wrote But both my grandmothers kind of encouraged me to write and express myself. When I got into junior high, I wrote a poem that I sent off, I think, to 17, and I actually published it. It was this, you know, ridiculous poem that went, a heart is not a plaything, a heart is not a toy, but if you want it broken, just give it to a boy. Anyway, but I didn't do much writing in junior high. When I got to high school, I played around a little bit. My English teacher, John McDonald, God rest his soul, was my inspiration to even get up and go to school. He was the kindest man to me, and he made me toe the line. But when I was in high school, I didn't live with my dad, and so Mr. McDonald was kind of like this father figure to me. But he introduced us to Edgar Allan Poe's The Raven, Nevermore, Nevermore. That was such a haunting poem. But I wrote a spoof in high school about our librarian, who never let me use the library because I always had overdue library books. And so I wrote a poem about basically constantly never being allowed in the library and finally paying off my library dues. And the last line was, nevermore, nevermore do I owe her anymore. But that was kind of high school. And again, I didn't get too much into writing poetry early on, but in between my junior and senior years of high school, I was lucky enough to go to the Nebraska Scholars Institute, where I met the Nebraska State Poet Laureate, William Clefcorn. And I have to say, that was for me the turning point. Listening to Clefcorn and having class with him every day was just a fabulous experience. Well, Clefcorn used to read poetry on NPR, and, you know, he had a series of poems about Ludi Jr., but he just became this inspiration for me. I wanted to learn to write poetry for him. He actually made a song at camp called, it was about my hometown, Benkelman, Nebraska, and he said something, I live in Benkelman, not in Cleveland, but in Benkelman, and I will live here for one hell of a long time. It was hilarious, and you know, Benkelman is just such a weird name to be from. What a town to be from, Benkelman, Nebraska. But anyway, you know, as I finished up high school, I competed on Inter High Day my senior year and won the Inter High Day contest in English Lit. And he and Mr. McDonald, when I was in high school, were the two people who really started me on my route to truly loving poetry. But even then, I was still miserable at writing it. I just didn't get it. And then when I was in college, I had a professor who I remember wrote one of the most beautiful lines I have ever heard. He was this strange little man who loved Native American culture, but the line was, 8 years ago I trimmed a tree, a pin oak tree, for love. Robert McEwen was his name, and I had a poetry class with him. Man, if we were late for class, he would lock us out. But that is where I first learned about prosody and real rhythm in poetry, and how even free verse has rhythm. And I wrote more, but the main thing that I did in college with poetry was I competed interscholastically with the speech team and got to travel all over the United States. And my junior year, we went to a national contest. I ended up in the top 5%, which at that contest is kind of like a national champion, because they didn't actually crown a national champion. They just gave trophies to the top 5% of finishers. But I did extremely well in poetry interpretation. And I absolutely was one of the first people to fall in love with the poem, Red Hat Lady, Why Can't I Think Right Now? You know, the like one that's, When I'm an Old Woman. Oh yeah. When I'm an old woman, I shall wear purple, with a red hat, which doesn't go and doesn't suit me, and I shall spend my pension on brandy and satin sandals and summer gloves, and say we've no money for butter. But, anyway, that poem and the poems I did with it were fairly successful for me. So I only competed my junior and senior year, but that's mostly what I did with poetry in college. And I didn't write much like lovesick poetry or anything like that, but then I headed off to graduate school, the University of North Carolina at Greensboro. Now, in North Carolina, I met a young man who helped me fall in love with T.S. Eliot and, you know, the love song of Jelford Prufrock, "Let us go then, you and I, when the evening is spread out against the sky like a patient etherized upon a table." Oh my gosh. He would sit around and read poetry to me and write love poetry, and I wrote love poetry. But at the end of that semester, I had to go back to the farm and break ice for the cattle and feed the cows, because my dad had just had quintuple bypass surgery, and so I wasn't able to finish my program at UNCG. So I came home to the farm and helped my parents and started my graduate studies at University of Nebraska at Kearney. And that is where I was introduced to Don Welch, who was a friend of William Clefcorn's. But, you know, Don Welch really helped me hone my poetry skills. But my favorite part of graduate school was a very wintry, cold day. I got to interview Clefcorn in his office at Wesleyan. And I think the couple of hours I spent with him were two of the most beautiful hours I have ever had. What a just amazing soul. Just funny, and I loved him so much. But anyway, you know, Don Welch really helped me hone my poetry skills. And on one of my poems, he said, "Samantha, you end your poems with a bang, not a whimper, and certainly not a wimp out." And that was a reference to T.S. Eliot, who he knew that I loved. While I was getting my master's degree, I dated a man who was in law school at the time, and, you know, he broke my heart. We got back together, and he broke my heart so many times, but he was brilliant and very hard on me. But, you know, I wrote a lot of poetry about him and that heartbreak, and a lot of times heartbreak does lead us to write poetry. But I know as I was getting my classes done, you know, I know my professors were afraid that I was never going to get that thesis done. And I remember he went to the UNL library one day and came back with 50 books and piled them up and said, "Tab them and write your thesis." And, you know, had he not done that research for me, I don't think, I mean, yes, I'm admitting I did not do my own research for my thesis, but I did do the legwork. And I did the thesis on Sandra Cisneros's Woman on the Loose, Loose Woman, or Loose Woman, her poetry collection. And my thesis advisor was Kate Benzel. And Kate, one of the kindest, most amazing, brilliant souls I've ever met in my life, she set me straight. There were times when I wanted to judge the poetry and say, "Oh, it should be this way, should be that way," because the thesis was actually, I scanned all of her poems and talked about the rhythm and the rhyme scheme in free verse poetry. But anyway, Kate would say, you can't judge the poetry and say it should be this or should be that way, Samantha. It is what it is. I mean, after all, she is a famous published author and you're not. But, you know, I loved Kate, and she did set me straight. But defending that thesis, you know, that was another beautiful day with poetry, talking about this, just a call to more rhyme and more rhythm in free verse, and because it helps the meaning, you know, the rhythm and the rhyme in poetry should punctuate what we're saying, not take away from it. But anyway, also, while I was in grad school, I took part in slam poetry contest. My friend Terry Lee was very good at it, and so was Dr. Peake, but I won the first year I entered at UNK, I won the Poetry Slam contest, and the next year I got to judge it, which was so much fun. But slam poetry is a little bit different, but it's so very rhythmic and fun and loud. But that was another instance of, you know, just more poetry in my life. And then somehow my parents decided, Samantha, you're 25, it's time to get married. And they pretty much picked the first guy that came along, and I got married. And I spent the next 18 years in a vacuum. I did not read, write poetry. And, you know, he kind of made fun of that. And I guess I just lost myself. So after the divorce, I started finding my voice again. And, you know, Todd, who's the guy I've kind of mentioned on TikTok before, any of you who follow me, you know, we FaceTimed and he really encouraged me to write again. And I thank him for that. So I've started writing and, you know, creating again, which has just been so fabulous for me. But, you know, as I think about poetry in my life, and, you know, people always talk about this, Terrence, this is stupid stuff, poetry, you know, it's not stupid. You know, the rhythm and flow and beauty in the seemingly mundane, that sight that leads to insight that poets are so good at bringing out, you know, people are poetic and life is poetic if we just let it be. And there's just so much beauty in poetry. And for those of you who love to read and write poetry, I continue to do so. I don't care whether you're an electrician or a physician. I mean, poetry can just enhance our lives. And as I end today, I want to mention my friend Janice, who I've recently, you know, come in contact with. I've met her on TikTok, and truly, as I look back over all the people in my life who have been influences on me, she talked about her husband who does slam poetry. And so, you know what I did? One of my TikToks, because of her encouragement, I made it into kind of a little slam poem. And, you know, Janice is one of the most beautiful, brilliant people I've ever met. I mean, if you guys don't follow her, she's Mom and Dad Reyes on TikTok, and she does trauma-informed care. But, you know, she's just continued to encourage me to get back into, you know, what I love to do. So I'll end this, and I guess you've heard a little bit about how dating and poetry has affected me and how poetry throughout my life, but, you know, so much depends upon just poetry, the rhythms of our lives, and how, you know, we all have so many similar experiences that poetry brings to light, you know, even if it's just watching ants move in a line across a sidewalk. I encourage you to read more poetry, to write more poetry. So much depends upon it. And here's where I read you a couple of poems. What's nice about this episode is it's all about poetry, so I guess it doesn't really matter which one I choose or what I choose to read. I forgot to mention that I did get to stay in the Dolomites at Ezra Pound's castle for a month, and having tea with his daughter, who was about 85 at the time, you know, that was a pretty amazing experience. We just read the cantos and discussed poetry and had soirees, and it was a pretty amazing thing. But anyway, while I was over there, you know, we flew into Germany, of course, and went to the Bolzano Museum, where we saw the Iceman Ötzi, and I wrote this cute little poem. It was called "I Am" at a Bolzano Museum. Preserved, prone, exposed, I am an Iceman Ötzi. Please return my pants. I mean, that's it. That was the whole thing, because I remember, like, being in this museum, seeing this Iceman who'd been preserved for thousands of years, and we've taken his clothes off of him, and he's just lying there naked. It's crazy. Anyway, so that's my cute little one. But now I will read you What's Old, What's New. And this one is because I talked about the piano and poetry and the hymns. What's old, what's new? Through the crack between the barn door and its frame, the one-eyed calico cat and the flop-eared blue heeler pursue the banny rooster, while the ponies, Thunder and Lightning, trot after the loping quarter horses on the east side of the corral. When Father, dressed in denim coveralls, lets off the clutch on the sputtering Ford and hops to the crusted ground, he pitches hay, spreads corn, then throws breadcrumbs from his pocket, and they all gather. The horses, the chicken, the dog, the cat. My brother, gay as a $2 bill, stands next to the Howard piano with gauze-bound hands punched through an upstairs window pane when he escaped the nightmare that someone lit the house afire. Mother plays, softly and tenderly, "This is my father's world," until her fingers callous against what's old, what's new. Thank you for joining me for this episode of Musings from the Middle of Nowhere. You know, it's been a few months since I've really made recordings. I got bronchitis so bad I wasn't able to really maintain my voice, and you know, I'm just getting back into it, and I thank you, listeners. But as we come to the end, I'd like to encourage you to put a little poetry in your life. Read some, write some. You'll be surprised that it just kind of makes the world go round just a little bit better. And remember, so much depends upon poetry and the red wheelbarrow glazed with rainwater beside the white chickens. I hope, as always, that my middle of nowhere is somewhere close to yours.